Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
On this day, in 1969, 500,000 young Americans were gathered on 600 acres of cow paddock near New York City for what would become an iconic event in history. Of course, it was Woodstock. That event, billed by promoters as an Aquarian Exposition, promised 3 days of peace and music. According to legend, goodwill reigned as food was shared amongst all the festival goers, babies were born, not a punch was thrown. But beneath the folklore, there was also a darker side too. What I'm really interested in tonight, though, is what has been the legacy of Woodstock? How has it changed culture? How has it changed music all of these 40 years later? Steve Turner is a UK-based writer, poet and rock historian, and he's with us again. Steve, good to talk to you again on Open House.
Hi, good to talk to you.
I believe you were 19 when Woodstock happened, but like so many other people, I also believe that you probably knew more about the whole phenomenon, more from the famous movie that came out the following year.
Yeah, I can't actually recall news of the event when it happened, but I certainly remember the film, and that was really... I mean, there was so much written about the film, and then there was a triple album that came out to accompany the film, and so that really was what hit most of the world, not the event itself.
You really do wonder just whether the legend would have survived without that movie.
Yeah, I think it would have. I mean, for example, the Monterey Festival. I mean, there was a movie that accompanied that, but it didn't have the kind of promotion that the Woodstock film had. And, I mean, if you know about rock history, you know about Monterey, but it's not become, you know, a byword for anything, whereas Woodstock, you know, became the Woodstock generation, and everybody has some kind of idea of what you're talking about if you talk about Woodstock. There is a mythology that's built around it.
Yes.
I mean, it's not accidental because of the way that the film was promoted, the 3 days of love, peace and music, and the logo of the guitar with the dove sitting on it. And then, of course, there was a song that Joni Mitchell wrote called Woodstock, which was, you know, recorded by Joni Mitchell and then was recorded by Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. It was a hit in Britain, a top 10 hit, I believe, by Matthew Southern Comfort. So, you know, there was all this additional promotion.
All kind of all built up around it. Now, the funny thing was that it actually wasn't held in Woodstock itself. They weren't allowed to build the stage there and actually hold it there in the end.
That's right. I think they picked on Woodstock. I've been to Woodstock. It's a lovely, rural, quite bohemian community, I don't know, a couple of hours outside New York. And Dylan was already living there, so most sort of rock fans knew about Woodstock and its reputation. And they wanted to have the festival near there because of the, you know, the impact of the Woodstock name and the feeling that, oh, maybe Bob Dylan will come along and play. That was quite key to the whole thing.
Mm.
But they ended up about, I think it's about 60 or 70 miles away at a place called Bethel.
Let's talk about some of the acts that performed at Woodstock and what it actually did for their careers. I believe it was Jimi Hendrix who first signed up and all the other acts kind of followed suit.
Oh, really? I didn't know that Jimi Hendrix was first.
Mm.
I mean, there were some acts that performed who didn't make the movie or didn't make the record, and like the Incredible String Band played, but they're on neither the record. They weren't in the movie. I think Crosby, Stills and Nash, there was some dispute about them appearing in the film, so they're on the soundtrack but not in the film. I think it enormously helped someone like Joe Cocker, for example, who sang with a little help from my friends the Beatles track.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was kind of known, but not to such a great extent. And having having put in a good performance that was captured on film, that really helped his career. I guess it helped The Who to a certain extent. There were people that I really wasn't all that familiar with, like Sly and the Family Stone, who were quite unusual for that lineup because it was basically a kind of long-haired rock.
Yes.
They were the people that reigned. And then you've got Sly and the Family Stone playing a kind of psychedelic funk.
Yes.
And I'd never heard anything like that before. But I suppose they were more actually a sign of things to come. Also, Shan and Ah, who were, you know, all dressed in sort of tight latex suits and playing old rock and roll tunes. I mean, that seemed sort of left field at the time.
Yeah.
But it was indicative of that kind of retro rock that was going to happen.
Mm. This is Open House. Steve Turner is with us, rock historian, writer, poet. We're talking about the impact of Woodstock 40 years on. In fact, 40 years ago, Woodstock was on. Now we've kind of got this giant mythology all around it. We're trying to work out just kind of what the legacy has actually been for that Woodstock event. So they were expecting to see, what, 50,000-odd people, but word spread, And an estimated 3 million people tried to get there, is that right? 3 million tried?
It was going to be much more small scale, but the news media picked up on it. And it being so close to New York and being at a weekend, you know, once radio started commenting on it, then people started to flood up. In fact, Joni Mitchell wrote the song Woodstock, but she didn't actually make it. She was in New York, and she saw on TV the fact that all the roads were jammed, and so she didn't even bother to go up there.
I heard that 3 million tried to get in, but only in the end 500,000 were actually able to get in. What did make it so popular, though? Why did the media pick up on it and, you know, the snowball start to roll?
Well, I think it became and has become a symbolic event. You know, it isn't just a festival. There have been thousands and thousands of festivals. But it became a festival which symbolised a whole movement. And it was that movement that you might refer to as hippie or you might refer to as counterculture. I think, you know, we've all got an idea of what we mean by that. Mm. And this event came to symbolise all the aspirations of that movement, because the people wanted it to show that we can all get together, we can have a good time, we don't need policing, we can just behave the way we like. We don't need the adult generation sort of looking down and scrutinising us. And when we do things like that, things don't go crazy, things don't get out of hand, everybody lives together in harmony.
So how did the Christian community react to Woodstock?
I can't actually remember any... I mean, Christians tend to be a bit delayed in their reactions anyway, and at the time there wasn't a lot of sort of critical commentary by Christians that I was aware of. I mean, I think the Christian culture tended to run parallel to the rest of the world, and occasionally comments would be made, but there wasn't any close scrutiny or analysis at the time. And in fact, it would have been a great time for Christians to have scrutinized and analyzed, because there was a kind of theological idea behind Woodstock, in the sense that it's captured in the Joni Mitchell song, and that's, you know, we've got to get back to the garden. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, we've got to get back to that state of the Garden of Eden, to original innocence. How do you do it? And Woodstock was putting forward an idea. Well, this is how you do it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Christian gospel presents another way. It says, you know, it's not just a case of positive thinking. There has to be a, you know, personal transformation.
Yeah. We've mentioned before when we've talked...
But actually, in addition to your question, Christians reacted by, you know, quite shortly afterwards getting their own festivals together. You know, there used to be, and particularly in America, Jesus Rock festivals. And probably the biggest one was one done in, I believe, Dallas. And I think it was called Expo 72. And it featured Johnny Cash and Kris Kristofferson and some Jesus Rock bands and Billy Graham. Hmm. So basically Christians reacted by saying, hey, this is a good thing to have festivals, to have huge gatherings and to be discussing things like original innocence. And, you know, we'll put on our own versions.
Yeah, interesting. We've talked before about the fact that you spent time with Francis Schaeffer at Le Brie, his chalet in Switzerland. Now, I'd be interested to know, what year did you study with Schaeffer?
Well, it was 1970, and in fact, I think I first read news about Woodstock while I was out there. Okay. And I certainly remember very, very clearly, because it's quite key to my development, and that was, there's a guy there called Oz Guinness, and he had a record player, which is quite a rare thing in those days, especially for somebody at Le Brie. And a kid had come over from America called Bob Kramer, and he had just like one change of clothes and a load of albums in his backpack. And one of those albums was Deja Vu by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. And he put it on the record player, and on that record was the song Woodstock. And it had this, you know, we've got to get back to the garden, and is this a time of life, or is it the time of man? You know, is this a kind of an evolutionary leap in the development of mankind? And I thought, wow, you know, these people are really discussing serious issues in popular music, and there really isn't a Christian contribution.
Yeah, well, the reason why I raise that, I would have thought that Francis Schaeffer, being the worldview thinker, philosopher that he was, would have probably had something to say about Woodstock if he'd known about it.
Yeah, he probably did. He certainly would have known about it, because he's kind of an avid reader of news magazines and anything he'd get his hands on. I can't specifically remember him talking about Woodstock, but I'm pretty sure he would have done. He picked up on everything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And certainly the portrayals of Woodstock that we have in the media really are fond, and they are nostalgic. You don't hear much about the end results of the whole free love, free drugs ideal. I mean, has the mythology neatly let go of that?
I mean, it's a big battlefield, really, isn't it? I mean, it still rages on, the idea, like, well, if you just leave us to our own devices, we can handle it, versus, you know, we need to listen to God. Mm. There will always be people that say, true freedom is just not having any interference, not having anybody lay down any rules, versus, you know, true freedom is being who you were created to be in the image of God. And I think that battle will always go on. You know, you get a microcosm of it in the whole Woodstock issue, really. When you look at Woodstock, you see what you think of as hippies sort of smoking dope and sleeping with each other and whatever, believing in peace and love. Now, that's fairly common now. I mean, I think your ordinary, in inverted commas, straight person is probably behaving exactly the same way now, except the hair may not be as long. So what was kind of rare and what you would describe as the hippie philosophy in those days has become much more pervasive now. Although you wouldn't call it the hippie philosophy, you just call it kind of normal thinking.
Though. Yeah, yeah. Well, let's end on that then. What, as a poet, as an artist, as a rock biographer, when you look back on Woodstock and look at the legacy that it's had, what has its impact been 40 years down the track, positives and negatives?
Well, I think one of the positive things is that generation was reacting against kind of straightness that was kind of stifling, the lack of individuality, the sort of devotion to the machine and making money and things like that. And I think that was a good thing. Unfortunately, for the people that were protesting, they saw Christianity as mixed up with that. You know, mm-hmm. Christianity, big business, the military, it was all kind of one thing to them. It was the straight sort of middle-class life, and they were reacting against it. But that emphasis on individualism, you know, we are all individuals, the emphasis on color, the emphasis on celebration, the emphasis on fun and play, I think they were good things, and that has gone on. And the legacy of that is that every year in the UK there are hundreds, if not thousands, of festivals, folk music, rock music, the arts, folk arts, anything. So the festival, the rock festival, has become a commonplace thing now. I think the negative side is that belief that we can do things our own way, that freedom means just obeying your own instincts and your own inclinations. It goes back to your whole view of what a human being is and whether there was, you know, in Christian terms we talk about the fall, that man was made perfect but that he fell. And so we've got some of that glory of being made like God, but we've also got that marred image.
The other question that needs to be raised is how much did the peace and love continue after Woodstock as well?
Well, almost by the time the Woodstock film came out, there was a festival in California called Altamont, which was headlined by the Rolling Stones. And they took the idea one stage further. You know, not only did we not need the police and the military and people to kind of look after us, but that we could substitute the police with the Hell's Angels, whose own idea of freedom was quite eccentric, to say the least. And so they had the Hell's Angels policing the stage, and it didn't work. And there was fighting, and in fact, one guy got killed because the Hell's Angels' idea of justice was to take a baseball bat or a cue or something and whack the guy over the head, and this particular guy died. And you got this rather pitiful scene of Mick Jagger on stage saying, "Hey, cool it, man, cool it. We don't want fighting." and you just realize how ineffective that sort of talk was in the face of real violence and real evil.
Yes.
It just seemed pitiful.
Yes. Well, Steve, always fascinating to talk to you. Thanks for your time.
Okay.
Yeah, Steve Turner, rock historian, artist, poet and thinker, talking about the impact of Woodstock 40-odd years later.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.